Mud Podcast presents.
All righty.
Yeah, this is Politically Correct Week in Review. And here we are a week away from the inauguration of Donald Trump as president. And who knows what's going to happen?
No, it's wild and weird news time because we don't have a president, of course. We have a husk who isn't even sitting in the office anymore. There was a video of mayor of Los Angeles talking to Biden and his closest advisors, and you just saw the backs of their heads, Dr. Jill and the soon-to-be former Vice President Kamala. And you could kind of see that he needed people around to remind him of what they were talking about and who this person was on TV. We're just waiting for it to end. That's all we can do. And yet, in this interregnum, Trump is filling it with baffle gab of the first order. He's issued 150 tweets, denouncing this person and making that crazy demand. And the news media have no news coming from Biden because Biden is vegetative. So they're treating Trump as if he's already in command. And basically he is.
Everything he says is hot button to talk about, including the crazy stuff that is really distracting from what's actually going to be happening starting tomorrow.
Yeah, that's really my point. Yeah. That 90% of what comes out of his mouth or his Twitter account is just, he's gibbering for attention.
Well,
monkey throwing his crap.
There is that notion that's his mode, especially if somebody else is being paid attention to and he feels wronged by that. Bringing it around to his way of thinking. No matter what he says, he's going to get airtime. All advertising is good. Even bad news is good if it mentions your name.
Yeah. So inquiring minds really want to know whether he's going to be jealous of Musk, who is also getting great airtime. And he had to deny having a romantic relationship with the Prime Minister of Italy.
Yeah,
Trump has never had to do that.
Right.
That's a new high.
Well, there's something in there.
We'll see if they can live through that.
Yeah, if you missed that, there was a picture circulating of she's Prime Minister, is that the
right
role in Italy, who's, an attractive woman. And so they were sitting next to each other, eyes locked, and he felt the need to clarify that they weren't an item, which for some reason.
It's pretty exciting stuff.
Well, apparently, there's people around Musk that are worried he's kind of losing it. He had like 60 tweets one day, and his are just as crazy sometimes too. And he changed his handle into a right-wing I can't remember the name. But there's this Pepe the Frog, that whole thing. He changed his handle to reflect more that sort of outlandish conservatism that he's embracing.
Huh. He's building for the future.
Yeah, right. Yeah, and this is all as the Senate hearings on cabinet picks begin tomorrow, which is really the most important thing of the new presidency is going to see if the Senate will confirm his many picks, which it's kind of crazy when you look at the layout of that situation, who's involved in the upcoming cabinet. There's 10, I think it approaches 10 Fox News personalities.
It's got to be a successful TV show or he can't be a proper president,
yeah,
right?
Well, so there was some notion.
These guys know how to do their jobs.
There was some notion that at the end of his last term there, he was watching, that kind of Fox feed for hours a day. And that was his main thing. That's how he was getting his information. Because, those presidential briefings can be so dense and boring. Who wants to listen to those when you can hear some people being outraged? There's a whole bunch of people on the cabinet that were – or his pick to be who were involved intimately with the creation of Project 2025, which he denies having any connection with or information of. I think there's five billionaires and several multimillionaires. It's going to be really rich. You know, all I can think is that these fires in L.A., they're pretty lucky that it happened on Biden's watch, you know, or his people's watch anyway, because who knows the kind of stuff that that Trump's put out around Newsom and the response to fires and so on, which once again, with no understanding of the realities of fire on the ground in California, I mean, it's, you know, he's blaming Newsom's protection of the Delta smelt as a reason for the fires getting out of control, which, I mean, is just patently absurd, really.
Well, his talking point is, as long as you don't know what he's talking about, the talking point is interesting. They let water flow into the ocean, going completely to waste, instead of drying the river and sending all the water to fill LA's reservoirs in the
next time. That term, going completely to waste, always rankles me because I, you know, having read the huge tome Cadillac Desert years ago, the idea that a river uncaptured is wasteful is just, you know, there's that. But, you know, Newsom did come out and say all the reservoirs are full. The state-operated reservoirs are full.
But the Santa Ynez one immediately above Pacific Palisades was empty. Yeah. But they all knew it was empty.
Yeah,
the city had been doing scheduled maintenance. Right. And I guess some firefighters were surprised, but surely if any of them read the newspaper, they'd have been aware.
Yeah.
And apparently the underlying problem up there was that the water demand at lower elevations had greater pressure and so disproportionately drained water away from the resources above where the fire was worst. And that's why, you know, there was no water in the
That happens fire in an urban conflagration every time, sure. Basically. Yeah, you know, the idea that directed energy weapons have caused the fires in L.A. is just, you know— They've got some extreme wind, some extreme dense population, lots of houses packed together. It's a recipe for that kind of fire. You know, it's not inconceivable that conflagrations like that happen. It's not so much natural that there was an ignition source somehow. We still don't know how responsible the power company was. I guess they don't have PG&E there, or do they?
No, they do.
Yeah.
I think.
Oh, it's San Diego that doesn't have PG&E.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a sister above Topanga there that did evacuate briefly, but hopefully is doing fine now.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. If you see the footage of the winds involved, it's, embers like that flying into your roof or something's going to catch on fire. That's just the way it goes. I mean, I've seen the theory that smart meter batteries are causing extreme fires as well, which I just can't. I mean, there's more battery in my computer than there is in a smart meter. And the idea that smart meter batteries connected that would then somehow fail and extremely heat with the thermal runaway that happens with lithium ion batteries would then transfer that heat into the wiring of the home so that it burns out. I mean, it's a little far-fetched. I mean, sure, electrical fires do happen. But again, going back to that question, the motivation, why do the powers that be want to destroy the planet? They live here too.
Well, you know, we can observe that the powers that be don't care about destroying the planet because they aren't doing serious things.
Of course they are. They've got their bunkers.
So, I mean, I have to acknowledge the underlying rationality of saying, well, they're obviously doing it. Just look at what they're doing. But
they'll get theirs that's one aspect is like, okay, and so who's going to grow their food and where?
My clearest sense of how irresponsible the responsible people are came maybe 20 years ago when I read that the bloated plutocrats of yore, before Musk and Bezos came along, were investing in farmland in central Saskatchewan and Manitoba, recognizing that we wouldn't do a thing about stopping climate change, that the grain belt of the United States was about to be incinerated by climate change, and Canada would be the new Midwest. Well, and they were already investing in the chaos that had been recognized and that we wouldn't do anything about because there was too much money to be made from the chaos and they were just going to profit – or rather their grandchildren were going to profit from it in 50 years.
I just got the signal. We got three calls stacked up.
Ooh, baby.
Okay. Wham, bam. Hello, caller number one.
Hi. I just wanted to call – I mean, you kind of hit most of the things about what's really causing the fire, and – I don't deny that there's all sorts of perverse agendas that upper government people do, but this fire was because of city planning and putting thousands of houses in a landscape that naturally burns every 40 years. Mm-hmm. And it's so annoying for Trump and other people to blame, you know, we're not giving the Delta Tunnel, et cetera, et cetera. All that water is going to farmland.
Right.
And it's 80 years of property developers lobbying government to have no regulations about having green banks and preserving agricultural regions around settlements and, you know, cement tile roofs. There's so many things that you can do to make society functional, but all of that cuts into the profit margins of the capitalists. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly what it always comes down to. And they will always blame, you know, theoretical non-existent socialist policies for the right calamities that capitalism has caused.
Yeah.
So, Mr. Directed Energy Weapon, please direct your energy at the real weapon that is destroying us. And that's capitalism and the ultra wealthy, not through weird, crazy, you know, space lasers, but through the actual day-to-day policies and the long, boring slog of getting off petrochemicals, because all this crazy conspiracy talk is just a diversion from the super wealthy and from people who want to make a buck at the expense of other people in general.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well said. Yeah,
rant over. Thanks for your platform.
Yeah, I did hear today an expert in urban development or architecture or something, I can't remember his credentials, but asked, you know, so if you were to rebuild LA neighborhoods now in the way they should be, he was a former firefighter as well. He said, well, you know, I could tell you how I would do it, but I can guarantee you nobody's going to want to this way because, you know, it takes too much thought and planning and to make a safe neighborhood development like that. People are going to rebuild the way they are accustomed to. One thing I know about LA, they've been accused of being the least sentimental architecturally in the country. You know, they redevelop and tear down historic buildings at the drop of a hat and rebuild things in their own image. I did tour that neighborhood that burned when I was in LA a few years ago. My sister had a book on, you know, self-guided architectural tours, and there's some old funky houses, you know, mid-century gems up there that we did a little walking tour. They're all gone now. So start over. And starting over on caller number two.
no matter how much water we have, no matter how much they want to blame, this is what I do now. They're blaming Native Americans for this water situation. You know, when you have a hurricane made out of fire, when you have the Santa Ana winds blowing the way they have been, doesn't matter how much water you have, you're not going to be able to stop that.
Yeah.
You simply are not going to be able to stop that. That is Mother Nature doing that, okay? I know we want to, you know, find some nefarious person behind the scenes, you know, some Wizard of Oz character behind the curtain who's controlling everything. I guess that makes things easy for us to discuss. If you're going to find somebody to blame on this one, folks, it's Mother Nature.
Yeah, that whole region is a desert. I remember vividly being at the Mission in San Diego, and there was an old picture of the original Mission building, and it's surrounded by barren desert. And then you take a look at what it looks like today, walk out the door, and there's lush vegetation everywhere and palm trees and, you know, tropical plants. And it's all created by humans to create this illusion of oasis with fossil water, no doubt.
Thousands of miles away.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just obviously, I mean, it is terrible to watch people lose their homes and lose their lives the way they have been down in Southern California. I think instead of blaming California and just hating on the state, which is real easy for some of us to do, I guess, maybe we got to show some compassion for those folks because they don't deserve what's happening to them. And, you know, and blaming the wrong people, just picking somebody that you despise for other reasons and trying to blame them for this is just, it's not going to work. People aren't going to buy into that. People are smarter than that. They understand that certain things are out of their control, like the weather, the winds. The flames sometimes are more than we can handle, no matter how well we prepare. And that's what's really going on. It's out of our control, and some things are out of our control.
It's often, I think also often people don't understand the role of firefighters in this situation. It's easier to understand up here, you know, the idea that we can't put out fires often. We can control their spread.
We can try to steer them.
But there are fires that don't go out until it gets too wet, you know, and even then sometimes they rekindle the next year. Down there, you know, I've seen before, you know, people pissed off at the fire services because they couldn't save my house. And it's like, you know, there's only so much you can do. The first goal of the firefighter is to save life. The next goal is to save property and to do it all safely. So, you can't save everything. Sometimes the calculation is where does the fire stop, not do we put the fire out. It's can we stop where it's going next?
And in that vein, you know, I saw the nicest, the fondest picture of Richard Nixon I've ever seen. He's standing on the roof of his rental house in Brentwood in 1961 with his thumb over the mouth of a garden hose in his suit pants, shirt, and necktie. No jacket. He's a working still.
Well, you can tell it was a crisis then.
he's watering down his roof when, you know, there was a bad fire that came through those hills a little further east in 1961. Mm-hmm. Hundreds of homes were lost, and you know, he was doing his part, and it's something to think about that you know, long timers up here know that you know, back in the day when the hippies first came up here, there were a lot of fires because people didn't understand what they were up against. So you know, as people were learning, they got better, but they got responsible.
Mm-hmm.
And we're not very responsible anymore. We just want to blame the mayor of L.A. or the governor or them.
KMUD is a community radio station in the Redwood region of Northern California. Donate to support people-powered radio at KMUD.org.
Hey, we got a couple more calls. It's a happening night. We got another caller.
Yeah, the whole issue with carrying capacity in California is the brunt of the manifest destiny in the 20th century California, and it's crazy and the development and all that. But I just wanted to bring up the specific thing. It's going to be interesting to see what the investigations turn up for these five different fires, or maybe there's more than that now. Mm-hmm. The Santa Ana, people have talked about a lot of the facts. But one of the things about fires reawakening, there was a thing in Washington Post today that there was a New Year's fire from, I guess it's sort of traditional in this particular neighborhood adjacent to this Temecula Ridge, I think, something like that. But they started a fire with firecrackers, fireworks on New Year's Eve, and they had to put it out. And it covered a pretty good-sized area, and there was a whole subdivision next door to it. And they put it out, and then there's like all this remote sensing. It's incredible, the technology of description and topography and all kinds of things. But they showed the start of the Palisades fire came exactly from the area where they had put a fire out a week before.
Mm.
And the 88 mile an hour or greater winds came up. And I remember back in the 70s, and this was mentioned earlier in the show, and Barnum. It was like months. I mean, they had fires in the winter of burn and slash, and they rekindled the next summer.
Yeah.
You know? And so that's going on, and it's out of whack, you know?
Yeah.
All right.
Thanks for that. Yeah, you know, when I was a firefighter out in Piercy, we had a call once where a guy and his young kid had been driving north from the city after the 4th of July and for some reason had some firecrackers and for some reason decided that it would be a good idea to pull over on the side of the road and light their firecrackers. It was hard to, you know, on scene there was a Cal Fire guy kind of, you know, pointed out these firecrackers that were the start of the fire. And I thought, it wasn't a very big fire, but still, it was a ridiculous exercise to think that somebody thought it was a good idea just to pull over in the middle of nowhere, safely on the shoulder of the highway, and make some sparks. Yeah. And a couple more callers. Oh, my God.
Hi.
Welcome, you're
me?
Yeah.
Yep.
That's you.
Oh, wow. Well, that caller, she was on before me, and I waited, and I listened to her again, and she takes a long time to get to her point, which she never seems to have one. But what I really wanted to say was the fires in L.A., regardless of the cause, and indeed, you know, the landscape is a real thing. The Santa Ana winds are a real thing. The density of the population is, you know, you can't deny it. But I heard a guy talking the other day about the fact of how many, and going back to a previous caller who said the term petrochemicals, the just vast quantities of synthetic, well, natural as well, but synthetic materials that occur in everybody's household these days, everything from the building materials, you know, in construction to things like, you know, your furniture and your clothing and all the things that people have in their houses and fuel supplies, propane tanks, and there is just a whole richness of material there to just burn like crazy.
Yeah, so houses burn hotter than wood.
Yeah. That's part of why it is burning so hot and crazy.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Yeah.
And that's about all I had to say about that. So,
okay, thanks.
Great, no, thanks for the show.
Your call.
Thank you.
I had an idea. Here's my good idea for future construction. A lot of those houses down there have swimming pools. There's some neighborhoods where every house has a swimming pool. And I thought, and probably a lot of them also have solar panels these days, or did. I thought, okay, how about a backup system, battery system that you shift your valve open to recirculate the gutters from your roof into your pool and fire up your rooftop sprinklers and just run the pool water over the roof continually for as long as your batteries hold out. How do you like that idea?
People are going to be playing with all that. And, of course, you know, we're talking about these expensive places going up in smoke. Private insurance companies are paying private firefighters to defend individual homes. And this is going to spawn a whole new generation of controversy now that this has been going on for years.
Yeah.
But now that it happened in a wealthy neighborhood, there's a lot of conflict. Who gets the water?
Yeah.
What right do they have to the fire hydrants if there were water in there?
I read the story about the origination of fire companies, you know, and how in New York City.
They were private. That's right.
They were private and they'd like duke it out who got to put the fire out, you know, like I got here first, you know. He fights in the street while the building's burning and then, you know, who gets to loot the place while they're saving the structure, right?
I think I heard that same conversation you alluded to earlier, he also said that, hey, you know, we figured out how to stop great urban fires. In the 19th century, there were, famous huge fires, Chicago, 1906, after the earthquake in San Francisco, big, big city fires, and zoning and regulated construction materials stopped that. We don't have major urban fires until now because of the myth of climate change.
Yeah. And, wasn't the Chicago fire was partly fueled by common walls amongst buildings? So they threw
and the funny thing is, you know, as a Chicagoan, I'm aware that it was an extremely dry summer and there were horrible, unusual winds blowing from the east rather than from the west as usual. Uh-huh. And so like in Southern California, there were special climactic conditions that that really blew up the spark. You know, another summer wouldn't have happened. And funnily, there was a fire hundreds of miles north of Waukini on the other end of Lake Michigan that killed almost three times as many people as the Chicago fire that got no publicity because there weren't any reporters there. So, you know, the whole western shore of Lake Michigan was up in smoke.
Yeah. No, it used to happen a lot more, and apparently it's going to happen a lot again. So, yeah, I mean, you hear about the Tokyo, you know, when all the houses are made of paper and wood back in the day, that big I'm not even sure the dates on that, but yeah.
Well, how about the firestorm, the firebombing of Tokyo in 1945?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's that, yeah.
That's as good as any of them. And all we had to do was drop a little propellant on it, and that was our plan. We burned the whole city down.
Yeah. No, I mean, you know, we're basically a target, too, for that kind of activity. It's sad to say that. Yeah, I don't even want to say it, actually. Forget I said that.
You've convinced me. I don't want to hear it.
Yeah, no, I mean, my mind. You know, this brings to mind, I came across a, I think, an Australian writer who said, we need to talk about the doom scroll industrial complex, a perpetual motion machine powered by anxiety. Not because doomers are wrong, many concerns are valid, but because they've built an attention economy that profits from perpetual panic. Modern prophets of doom discovered a sustainable model. Never be specifically wrong, only generally right about badness. The financial system will crash next week and fail. The system is corrupt and doomed and never does. So, there we go. Which brings me to...
I love that. That's great.
Yeah. That was Joan Westenberg quoted. There's the changes in social media that are going on. Meta has announced, Zuckerberg announced that Meta will no longer have fact checkers. They had at some point in 2020, they brought on professional, quote unquote, fact checkers. 90 different operations were looking at stuff. And apparently the fact checker, one fact checker in particular, said the first he heard that they were changing the policy, which, you know, they just renewed the contract for recently, was on social media. They didn't give him a phone call or anything about it. It was just like, hey, you're not going to be needed anymore.
Yeah.
And one of the reasons being, citing political bias. And I thought, okay, political bias of fact checking. I, of course, fact checkers can have political biases, but facts are facts, right?
No, that's not true. That is just plain no longer true.
It's not true anymore?
Facts are no longer facts?
That's
the problem.
I see.
We don't have authoritative sources. Mm-hmm. We don't have sourcing that we can take any responsibility for. Anyone who wants to can come up with 10 lies the government told about COVID, and that proves that you can't trust the government. Now, some of the things that they say, in fact, are not only factual, they're facts, yes. But if you don't have the ability to test the factuality of every assertion, and the government is often lying, then you really can't say, well, somebody ought to be in charge of sifting truth from falsehood. When Facebook took up the challenge, well, was assigned the challenge of moderating and insisting on truth, many of the – you say there were 90 different sources. Many of those were nonprofit corporations, some of them actually partially or entirely funded by the government itself. So the government sets up these organizations to say what is and isn't true, and then it tells the social media to follow the advice of these not independent corporations that are insisting on government lines. And what Facebook is now doing is the same thing that Twitter has decided to do. They've given up on claiming godly powers of absolute clarity on what's right and wrong, what's true and false. And instead, they're going to community standards where the voices of all of the readers can pile on to any assertion and say, hey, you know, this is questionable, this is nonsense. And they don't say what's true and false. They say, you know, most of our readers say that this is an unprovable assertion. And I think that's a step in the right direction because, you know.
So facts by.
When we grew up with a lot of truth when we were kids, a lot of those truths were straight up falsehoods too, like racial superiority, for example.
So we get to vote on truth now. Is that. That's the idea.
Well, yeah. You don't go to Facebook for truth.
Yeah,
that's the underlying truth.
Yeah, no, that is the underlying thing. I mean, I just looked up, you know, how Facebook algorithms actually work, and it's more and more with AI as well. But you know, the analysis that's going on about what you see, and I've explained this to elders who are playing with Facebook that don't really understand that everybody's Facebook feed is completely different than everybody else's. You know, that there's the notion that there's millions of people playing Facebook every day, and no two feeds are alike. It's quite an operation.
Mm-hmm. How are you going to have a consensual reality?
Yeah, they do an inventory of of your potential content, which includes your friends, who you follow, what you've clicked on before, and then they evaluate various signals or ranking factors to gauge how relevant each piece of content is to the user, which, you know, how? And then predict what you're likely to enjoy and then rank the relevance of things. If people knew how manipulated the feed they're taking as their own true feed, I guess...
Yeah,
it's a very crazy thing. I don't know. The alternatives that are ranking up the new concept of open sourced non-algorithmic social media remains to be seen. The blue sky that people are going to replace their Twitter thing. I have seen on Facebook people coming up. I'm on Blue Sky now, but I don't know how to find anybody because they're
not there.
Yeah, well, but even if you are there, it's like no, you have to design your own feed. You have to go to you have to like somebody and follow somebody and subscribe to somebody to see what they're giving you. It doesn't just feed automatically like Twitter would. The algorithm isn't there. You have to make your own. It's a new world, that's for sure.
Oh, no, I think people really should understand that we had kind of a false sense of security about facts when we accepted authority. And now that authority basically has been, I don't want to say disgraced because somebody can disagree and that's okay, but many, many people no longer feel any trust in authorities for good reason. And as a result of that, to try to assert that we can rebuild community by more effectively preventing people from saying anything that we don't want to be true won't work. Won't work.
Yeah.
People are far too skeptical about authority itself.
Yes. I just saw an article that starts with, cynicism is the cheap seats, the fast food of intellectual positions.
Yeah, and that's the arrogance of elites. Right. Shut up and listen to me. What's the matter with you, punk? Eat your peanuts and shut your mouth.
Yeah.
No, if you want to know, my picture of how this began was when Google started personalizing search results.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
Google was invented for the purpose of giving you facts. When they made more money from giving you what they thought they could pander you with than giving you the facts, I mean, that's proof positive of what I'm describing.
Yeah.
The play of truth factors is far more complex than up and down, right and wrong, black and white.
Yeah, so the Google found out they could make a lot of money advertising because they had so many ways to target advertising.
But it meant that there was no longer even a commonly agreed fact basis for them to give to everyone. Instead, everybody got their own facts. Everybody got their own results.
Right.
And it was so easy to do because that's the nature of the ever more quizzical and uncertain world that we live in.
And now
we're no longer in a world of certainties.
Of course, now Google has enacted AI in their search results, so that often if you do a search for something kind of nonspecific, if you're just looking for some information, the first thing you will see is an AI interpretation of what the answers to your question are. they label it as such, and they say it's you know, in beta, it's in development, it's not definitive, but you know, that's only so many people are going to read the fine print there, I guess.
Well, and how does it come out? I abandoned Google a while ago, so I haven't seen any of this
stuff. Well, if you say what's Trump going to, you know, I let's see, what's a good example? You know, it basically a search that's not doesn't include a website or a authoritative source of some sort. That's just sort of a vague question. You know how you know Google a question. You know, mm-hmm. I've got a question, and you Google it out there. It'll give you an answer quickly, and cite various sources that you know that you can look up. But it sort of aggregated the top hits on that thing into one paragraph. Looks like we've got another caller. Hello, caller.
Hey there. Hi. You're on. Welcome.
Hi. So I'll confess, I'm double dipping here, but the reason is that twice now I have gotten an alert on the radio application on my phone here, telling me that hackers are watching me, and please do not, you know, don't leave this page. So of course, what I do is get the hell out of there. But yeah. I don't know if anybody's encountered this. So the first time it happened, it actually, there was a noise, an alert sound, and the phone vibrated. The second time, it just popped up when I, you know, went to the application. But it's making me feel a little nervous.
Yeah.
The nerves.
I don't know what it means. I need someone to tell me the facts.
So in terms of connectivity, too, you know, I had somebody tell me their internet was out today down in the Bay Area, and I looked it up for them, and AT&T outage indicator shows up and down the coast, ringing the whole Bay Area, and especially in LA, which is understandable. AT&T is having a major outage issues here and there. We are on a thread here, you know, the information, like I need emergency information, my house is burning down, or, you know, where do I go? What's happening? Where's the fire? Oh, just look it up online. Well, okay, internet goes out. Oh, just use your phone. Well, the cell tower goes out. And I don't know if you heard the cell tower were out. There was a cell outage in LA, and people got evacuation notices. When the cell tower was re-enabled, they had cached...
So they got stale.
They got stale information broadcast to them. God. Yeah.
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 Well, so I don't. You know, what's real? What's the truth? I don't know. I have no idea anymore.
Well, we could ask Pinocchio and see if his nose grows.
everybody, polish off your pendulum.
Just ask us. We're as good an authority as anyone. Come on.
Well,
tools of divination.
Yeah. Well, we're at the top of the hour here, and I think we've got a record for how many callers we've had tonight. Thanks for your call.
All right. Good night.
Yeah, thanks. Good night.
Hey, thanks for your call.
Yeah, thanks, Javi, for negotiating the phone lines. And
indeed.
Charlie, do check out the Politically Correct Week in Review Facebook page. I got the quote from that writer on there, and I'll add some other stuff, I'm sure. Yeah, increase your click-through rate. Check out the K-Mud.
We're going to make our first 10 cents any month now.
Check out the K-Mud blog for my end-of-the-year blog I did that recounts, of all things, the history of World War I. I don't know how I got there, but I just did an overview of the history of World War I as an example of unintended consequences. Thanks, Charlie. See you next time.
This has been a K-Mud podcast. To listen to other shows and more episodes of this show, find us on all the platforms where you get your podcast, and also on our website, kmud.org.